Greetings, urban farmers, gardeners, and healthy food visionaries. Farmer Greg here, and welcome to the 819th episode of the Urban Farm Podcast, where every day we work together to educate and inspire you to become part of your food revolution. Today, we have our monthly seed chat with Bill McDorman, talking about seed starting. Enjoy. Welcome, welcome, everybody. Greg Peterson here with Bill McDorman for our May 2024 Seed Chat. Always love working with you, Bill. Welcome, welcome.
Yeah, this is the only time I get to see you. It's great. It's kept our friendship vibrant.
There you go. There you go. And you're going to be on my side of the country here in the next couple of months. You're going to do a bike ride, aren't you?
A bike race, yes, in July in Augusta, Georgia.
And what is it?
It's USA Cycling's Masters National Championships.
Wow. Congratulations. That's awesome.
I'm competitive because everybody my age doesn't race anymore. If you hold out long enough, you finally have a chance.
There you go. There you go. All right. Tonight, we're with Bill McDorman. We're going to be talking about whether you're a gardening novice or a seasoned enthusiast. Join us for an engaging session about identifying the secrets of success of seed planting. We'll guide you through the entire process from selecting the right seeds to nurturing them into thriving plants. Learn about soil preparation, optimal planting depths, and the crucial role of sunlight and water. Discover insider tips for overcoming common challenges and ensuring a bountiful harvest. All right, there we have it. Thank you, Bell, for writing that always great script. And let's jump in. So where do we start, Bill?
If you want to discover those tips that she talks about, mm-hmm. ask questions. Those will be most important and valuable to you if they're your questions. It doesn't matter how specific they are to your particular situation. That's why we're here, is to help everybody.
Excellent. And for those of you who are here live, this will be released on the podcast next month. And for those of you that are listening to the podcast, you can listen to this live and give us your questions. We do this the third Tuesday of the month, every month. And you can go to seedchat.org and sign up. So,
yeah, come on live whenever you can. And so we'll just treat this as an open space.
Perfect. And then put your questions on the Q&A tab at the bottom of the chat window. Not the chat window, the window where we're broadcasting from. All right, where do we start, sir?
Well, I'm going to, as I get older, I start questioning more assumptions in my life about conventional wisdom, especially. And I think there's some things about planting seeds that maybe at the beginning, I should say, to help stir things up, maybe stimulate some questions.
Okay.
One is this whole idea of choosing which seeds. And 45 years I've been trying to tell people to grow and save their own seeds. And the answer to what seeds are right is really simple. The ones that you have gotten from your neighbor down the street or somebody around you that are already adapted to where you are. And you can do seed exchanges now, and there's 600 seed libraries, and there's just no reason not to look there first to try to find your seeds. But I want to question it just a little bit further. And I got stimulated to think like this from Carol Depe, Dr. Carol Depe, who taught genetics at Harvard for 25 years. And after she retired and turned home to her garden in Oregon, she started to question this idea that maybe the seeds choose us. You know, that we think we're in control all the time. And I remember in passing what Michael Pollan in his book, Botany of Desire, said, really, if you think about it in a proper way, it's more like the grass family of plants on the planet have cultivated humanity and moved us around and allowed us to build certain empires, because between wheat and corn, especially, and rye and a couple other grass family plants, that has been what has fueled the whole rise of what we call human civilization. And we think we're the ones doing it, but maybe it was the intelligence embodied in those plants. And we co-created each other as these crops, as Roland White says so eloquently. And so I just want you to open up your mind a little bit and be open to allowing things to come into your life and into your garden that you never would have chosen yourself, probably never would have planned on. But because of some synchronicity or something that happened, you end up with it, and it seems like a good idea at the time. And I guess what I'm doing is encouraging you to go for it, take chances, listen to those inner voices or to the voices of the seeds themselves, because I think there's a lot of intelligence out there, and sometimes I end up with way better things, you know.
So selecting the right seeds, I know you touched on that. You know what I tell people? What I tell people about fruit trees is, what do you like?
Yeah, exactly.
People come to me and say, which fruit tree should I plant? And I'll say, which fruit do you like to eat?
Where do I start? With something you love. And if you're going to make a mistake, only plant one thing. Most Americans, you get into gardening and this whole idea and you go, oh my God, I'm going to grow all this stuff. And you get overwhelmed and stressed out and the whole idea collapses. So you can make a mistake and go too small, too. You have more time, energy, and resources than you probably think you do, especially if you start to get into it. But just choose one thing to get started with and have a huge success. And it's the thing you like to eat most. What's wrong with that?
Yeah.
And then save the seeds from that. And then you're making a real contribution to all of us because you're adapting those things right where you are and selecting around the characteristics that you really want or like. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you very much.
and there's this whole notion of the difference between open pollinated or heirloom seeds and hybrid seeds. You want to speak to that?
So that's a rather modern distinction.
Yep.
It's been really important over the last 30 or 40 years ago as gardeners and farmers all over the world wake up to the fact that they can actually have better seeds if they just grow and save their own in their own communities. And they're starting from a place, though, where almost all the seeds that are available to them, and in their own wash-brained way, they think the only place they can get their seeds is to buy them in little packets. And we just came through an era where the majority of those seeds, in fact, almost all of them in some areas and some stores, were hybrids. So what does that mean? That the working definition would be they were hybridized to keep you from saving your own seeds, or at least from thinking that you can save your own seeds.
Yeah.
And I could go into the whole definition of what a hybrid is and its difference. But in that period, an easy way to get new seed savers involved and not to have to deal with the complexities of what might take place with hybrids, just save seeds from non-hybrids. There's something all wrong with the system when you're doing the non, right?
Yeah.
Non-hybrid. So the word that became operational, and it's not quite biologically accurate in its description, but it's the working title for non-hybrid vegetable garden seeds in America in the last 30 years is open pollinated. All right. So that's where that came from.
I had a very interesting thing happen, and I've told you this story before. When we arrived here in Asheville, I started worm composting. Worm composting is cold composting. It's not hot composting. And so I was taking all the scraps from all our dinners and all that kind of stuff and putting them in the worm bin. And after a year, I was harvesting those worm castings out of the bottom of my worm bin. And I used those worm castings to plant my orchard. I planted 160 fruit trees and berry bushes last summer. And one of the things that happened was there were tomato seeds that got put in
the orchard. Wow.
Yeah. So what happened was, is those tomato seeds made it from the worm bin to the fruit trees basins. And we had over 30 tomato plants that self-planted in the rows of fruit trees last year.
Perfect.
But here's the interesting thing. I'm quite sure that the tomatoes that we were buying at the grocery store were hybrids.
It's very much possible. Not always. You have to pay $4.50 for heirlooms, right?
No, these were packaged tomatoes that we bought.
Right,
And so whatever seeds made it. The interesting thing about those 30 tomatoes is there was a massive variety. We had watermelon tomatoes. We had teardrop. We had little red ones. We had big red ones. We probably had a dozen different varieties of tomatoes that showed up from those hybrid seeds that volunteered. Tell people why that happened.
Well, so hybrids are the modern definition of a hybrid in this context. Is that it is the immediate offspring of two inbred parents. And so why do I say that? In order to fix characteristics in plants, to know that they're there, a breeder will inbreed them over and over again to make sure that those specific characteristics are in there. And then what they'll do is cross two different sets to get a complete set of what they want in their plant. And they can predict then in that offspring what all those characteristics are going to be. This is the modern hybrid vegetable seed industry. All right. If you take those seeds from that planned hybrid and plant those, you're going on Mr. Toad's wild ride. And you just described it really well. Watermelon.
Exactly.
The little ones and all the color or whatever. And why is that? They're the grandkids. All right. There were grandparents involved in this whole process that they started with when they started the inbreeding. And because they fixed those characteristics, they all got hidden. They're all recessives. And when they cross, those recessives are all in there, but they're hidden.
Yeah.
And when you take those seeds from a hybrid and plant those, all those recessives can come out and play. They may get all hooked back up again. This is what, this is like a red-haired grandchild from a blonde mother and a black-haired father. We've all seen this before. They go, where did the redhead come from? Oh, that's right. My grandmother had red hair.
Yeah.
It was a recessive that was hidden in the parents' generation, all right? And so that's all it is. And so if you're willing to deal with that kind of complexity and unpredictability, I think saving seeds from hybrids is actually more fun and more productive. Yes. If you're a market gardener or farmer and you have to predict your crop outcome because you're going to make your living on it when you take it down to the farmer's market or whatever, then you don't want to be doing this, all right? You can't depend on it. And that's the only reason that hybrids get a bad rap. You can't save seed from hybrids. Well, yeah, you can. You just can't do it if you want to make a living on it.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. Play with hybrids. I've been saving the pepper seeds from our peppers from the grocery store. I'm going to do the same thing with them.
Oh, God. Peppers even worse or better, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah,
as far as the hidden diversity in hybrids. I swear I got 200 different kinds of peppers off of saving the seeds from a gypsy hybrid pepper one time.
Nice. All right. So next, let's talk about soil preparation. What kind of soils do we want to start seeds in?
Let's start with a big Google Earth picture of it.
Okay.
Very little of the soil on the planet is good for agriculture. And even a smaller part of it is very good. I'm a John Jevons devotee and always believed in compost and building soil, building up the humus in your soil and making what little soil you have better. And in learning how to plant intensively, so you make the most use out of the small amount of really good, double dug, aerated, black, humusy, holds moisture a long time soil.
Mm-hmm.
If we're really going to do good work, at least part of our work should be to learn how to grow enough food for everybody.
Yeah.
We're probably not going to find enough good soil for everybody. And so we either go about get John Jevons' book, How to Grow More Vegetables, and learn how to compost so we can start down that road, or take a left turn and do what Joseph Lofthouse says. Don't worry about it. And in fact, bad soil is your best ally. Instead of trying to change the soil so that your crops are better, plant a wide diversity of the crops that are already out there and see which ones work in your poor soil. All right? That there's been 10,000 years of work done on these crops in largely poor soil conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Now you may not get the yield, but you're getting food, and there's all sorts of trade-offs. And what I'm looking for are people who are gardening on this level in every area of the world that have learned which varieties work well in their area with the fewest inputs. And I would put making your soil really good as one of those inputs that we need to learn to minimize. All right. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That's a curious way to take it, because I've been spending a lot of money on really great soil here.
And guess what, Greg? I do too. I'm not saying abandon the whole other way, but let's expand our minds a little bit and let's not beat ourselves up as gardeners because we don't have the perfect soil.
Yeah.
Always just count that as an experiment to find better seeds. That's all you should do. And plant as much as you can then. There are 400,000 varieties of wheat.
Whoa.
Seed
of
bank.
Wheat?
Of wheat.
Almost a half a million.
Almost a half a million.
Wow.
So that's my new hobby, is trying to get out tens of thousands of those varieties, mix them all up, and plant them in pure sand in an area that only gets 2 inches of rainfall a year, and see what works.
Yeah.
Because I figure about half the planet is going to be in some kind of conditions like that soon.
Yeah.
And we are not going to have the time, energy, or money to build new soil.
Interesting. All right. That's cool.
Let me give you another way of looking at it. And this came
Please. To mind.
I was at the David Brower Center in Berkeley. David Brower started Friends of the Earth, celebrated environmentalists. And there's a multi-million dollar David Brower Center there. And they use it for environmental conferences. And when I was there, I can't remember the topic, which conference it was, but there was somebody there from California state government. And this is when Jerry Brown was the governor. And they had just allocated, get this, the state of California had allocated $1 billion to study how to make soil better in California for farmers, for programs, for grants, for we need soil is the basis. You hear that all the time. Soil is the basis of our agriculture. We need to pay attention to it. We need to learn about it. We need to make it better. I'll never argue with that. That's really a great thing. However, $1 billion? So I raised my hand. I was in the back and I said, can I have $1 million for seeds? And they're all looking at me. And I said, if you think about it, with $1 million, I could run a $20,000 to $200,000 seed school program in each of the 50 states and train thousands of gardeners and small farmers how to save their own seeds and sift through the world's diversity and find what works in California in the poor soil that you already have. And in the end, I'm just saying, end up with more productivity for 1,000th of the money that you're going to spend trying to build soil.
What'd they
it's
say?
It's a good idea and we need to do it, but how many years left do we have to what do this sort of?
What was their response?
Oh, it was one of those quiet and let's go on to the next topic things. But it stimulated me to think about it. And that's been the path I've been on ever since. Get as many different varieties of things while you can, and they're still moving in the mail or they're down at your store or whatever. Get your hybrids, bring stuff home from restaurants, whatever it is, and plant it in a place where you don't have to take care of it all the time and see if anything works, because those will be the crops that we're looking for.
Yeah. Alchemy of Birth says probably would increase soil quality finding plants that will grow.
There you go. Yeah, it's a win, right? That might be the way to do it.
Yeah.
They're not exclusive and they're not either or. And we need to work on everything. I don't want to
on both.
You know, sound like I'm disparaging.
Oh,
I'm
not
just
at all.
Look at what we're doing with seats and some of the varieties that have shown up already from people starting to do this. And it's phenomenal.
So I have some questions here. Lisa wants to know, when do I harvest the seeds and how do I store them if those plants won't grow in our Arizona summer so I can use them in the fall? Lisa, first of all, I'm going to ask that you tell us what kind of seeds.
There you go.
But let's just pick, let's say lettuce. All right, lettuce, the lettuces, the winter crops, lettuces and brassicas and that kind of stuff. So when we would harvest them would be?
You harvest them when they're little white parachutes and they're starting to blow away.
Mm-hmm.
So you just learn to recognize that stage and you can find a picture of it. What I do is when lettuce, when it bolts, that's normally when you stop eating it.
It goes bitter.
The leaves get bitter, right? And let it grow up. Sometimes they can get 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
The plume that comes off there, when it, then they'll have yellow flowers.
This is lettuce.
This is lettuce. And then those flowers will turn to little dandelion type parachutes. And at the bottom of each one is a little black seed. So you'll never get all of them at the perfect stage. But when it looks like about half of it's all white and ready to fly away, I just cut off the whole stalk, stuff it down in a big brown paper bag and shake it back and forth and shake off all the seeds I can and let them go into the bag. And I'll just go down the row really quickly doing that.
Yeah.
And just to finish answering the question, because it gets asked every time, store your seeds cool, dark, and dry. Keep below 80 degrees. All right.
That was her next question. How long will the seeds last before planting them again?
Decades. If they're cool, dark, and dry.
Yeah.
All right. A lot longer than industry would have you believe.
Yeah.
There isn't any reason with lettuce why you shouldn't get 70 or 80% germ after 10 years. If you leave them in your car window, or if they get rained on, or there's lots of things that can degrade them, but cool, dark, and dry. And so I think the perfect storage medium is clay pots. The Egyptians, 4,000 years ago, there's pictures of romaine lettuce on the sides of pyramids. They're the ones that really did lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
And they stored their seeds in clay, probably. Just guessing.
Leslie says, Lowe's in Boulder, Colorado, still in the 40s. Will anything produce? So that's really two questions, Leslie. How do we get seeds started in the 40s? Probably get some seed mats. Yeah.
Good. There are seeds that germinate in the 40s.
Really?
Yeah. Especially this time of year.
Yeah, I'm going to do a shout out to Penn's
Parmenter. Miss Penn's
seeds. High altitude seeds.
Right.
She's at 10,000 feet in Colorado, but she's got seeds that do well at 8,000 to 10,000 feet in Colorado.
She lives at 8,000 and 8, she 000. Collects wildflower seeds up to 10.
There you
she's
go.
She's outside of Colorado. Basically. Yeah, fine varieties. There's a huge range in varieties. If you're trying to plant warm season plants, is what we used to call them. So what's the definition between a warm season and a cold season plant? A warm season plant dies if it frosts.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. So you have to wait till after it freezes or you have to protect them. But even among the warm season plants, there are some that germinate in colder soil. Johnny's Selected Seeds catalog used to have a germination, temperature germination chart around each vegetable. And you can get an idea of the range for each vegetable. But generally, things like the mustards, arugula, I would count in that. The cabbages, the Napa cabbages, the Chinese cabbages, those kinds of things germinate first in cold soil. And so those are the things you want. And you can get a soil thermometer, stick it down about an inch, and see what your soil temp is. It comes up in the day and goes down at night, but the curve is way more consistent than air temp.
Yeah.
And so you can start to get an idea if you want to be a scientist. If not, just keep planting.
Right.
You know, radishes are one of the first things that'll pop also.
Yeah.
On peas.
I had a variety of spinach that we planted in September
there
that
you
we
go.
Were hoping would produce in October, November. It grew slowly and survived a little bit of snow and the cold weather we got, and it absolutely exploded in February. I've been harvesting spinach in low temps in February, March, April, and what's coming to an end is bolting now. So
we used to sell a variety of Bloomsdale called Winter Bloomsdale.
Mm-hmm.
That was selected from plants that were doing that to try to.
Nice. John Hershey says, I'm in zone 5B on the Colorado Front Range. When my spring lettuce bolts, can the seeds be planted right away for a fall harvest?
Of course.
It's definitely worth a try.
You know what? It may happen without your intervention. And that's another thing I'd like to say. We think we're in control of planting seeds sometimes. And we all know volunteers are sometimes our best plants. And sometimes the plants are doing their own thing anyway. And you just walk out and go, oh, thank you. So always be open to that, allowing that to happen. But that surely can happen.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I love telling this story. At the Urban Farm, I lived there for 32 years. It was in Phoenix, Arizona, a third of an acre right in the middle of the city. And I exploded over those 32 years. I exploded the diversity on that property. There were literally hundreds and hundreds of different kinds of plants growing on the property because I was planting open pollinated seeds. And one of the things that happened, I loved this when it happened. One of the things that happened is my neighbors had pretty much a few weeds and grass in their front yard. And I was walking the dog one day. This was across the street, and there was lettuce growing in their front lawn.
Oops.
Gotta love it.
Do we have the right to biological privacy?
Yeah.
They sue you.
There you go. Kathy and Bob want to know, can apple trees be grown from seed? You want to speak to that, or you want me to?
You're the tree guy, but yeah, a short answer, yes.
Yeah. And there's a guy in our history called Johnny Appleseed. He was an actual real human being. And his story got told. Do you remember which book his story was in, Bill?
Oh, I can't remember.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank on it. But what he would do is he would go to the cider mills. He would get seeds from the cider mills, and he would go ahead of the civilization, and he would plant out tens of thousands of apple seeds in front of the travelers that were coming, so that he would have something to sell them when they arrived.
Yeah.
And what that did is that exploded the diversity of apples in our country. And there's Geneva Institute up in Geneva, New York, is part of the Cooperative Extension. They have a collection of something like 5,500 different apple varieties. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's because, and this is what you have to understand about apple as a plant. If you want to save seeds from something, learn its breeding system.
Yeah.
And apples are basically an outcrossing wind and insect pollinated crop. And so every apple seed can have a different father. The pollen can, and if you're in a really diverse, like a Johnny Appleseed row where there's lots of different kinds of apple trees, you have no idea, in other words, what you're going to be getting. And apple trees take how many years from the time you plant a seed until you get apples? Eight?
At the very earliest, but I was just going to say more like 8 to 10 years before you're getting a nice crop.
Right. So if you're looking for a really great eating apple, you're risking 8 to 10 years and you may not like it.
Yeah.
It may be inedible fresh. Johnny Appleseed didn't care because most of those apples are being crushed and made into applejack, right? They would ferment the juice and make alcohol. That's what they were really after. So it was fine. So you just have to be aware of that. And then on the 1 in a trillion chance that you get a really super good eating apple that is exactly like one of the ones from the stores, mm-hmm. Say you got a Gala or a Honeycrisp or a Pink Lady, right? And that's possible. You're just throwing dice and it's how the genetics line up. But if you got one of those, the people that own that have patented those varieties are coming after you. So don't tell anybody.
Exactly. I was going to say, don't tell anybody. Exactly. A couple things. Optimal planting depths. So do you want to speak to how far down you plant seeds?
Let me answer that in a different way. Seeds will store, we know, for thousands of years. There are carbon dated copies. That's the outer. You know, we know in the Southwest, 600 years is not too long for some of the beans and the corn in clay pots. All right. So they'll sit there dormant. It's a living, breathing embryo. Slows itself down. It's got a hard shell and it's waiting. The trigger for it to wake up and start growing again is moisture and warmth. And they both have to be there. So they start warming up and it starts absorbing moisture. And that starts firing off all sorts of enzymes. And then the ball gets rolling. So from the time it starts to get moist and swell up until it develops enough that a little radical, we call it, the first of the little root comes out of the seed and goes into the ground and can start bringing in its own moisture. If it dries out, it's dead. That's the most vulnerable part of gardening. That's when for 30 years, I took phone calls and texts just before the internet, questions about, oh, your seeds didn't work, or the crop never came up, or whatever it was. The seed failure is most often caused by allowing seeds to dry out in between waterings, when before that radical hits the ground. And if it's something like carrots, that can be 3 weeks. That's why carrot seeds hard to start. Why I always put newspaper over mine after I planted them in the dirt, and then put a little bit of dirt on the newspaper. And then I would water the newspaper and it would get really wet and it would dry out during the day, but underneath it, it would stay moist enough for my carrots to germinate. So how deep? I'm answering the question. How deep enough to keep them moist in between waterings? How deep is too deep? The Hopi plant their corn seeds at Second Mesa a foot deep.
Yep.
So I don't know if there's a too deep. Obviously, some of when they first started doing that, probably a lot of the corn didn't work. But some of those corn seeds figured out how to do it. And those are the ones that were successful and the ones they saved. So you can change that probably. Yeah. Most of my seeds I cover with a half inch to an inch.
Yeah.
And I keep an eye on them and I never let them dry out before they germinate. Once they germinate, they start building in their resilience. But you can't, don't mess with that period.
And then the next one, the crucial role of sunlight and water. And you just spoke to that.
Right. Yeah, they all evolved together.
I'll be straight up about this. Bill and I own a company along with Janice and Bell called the Great American Seed Up. And we have seeds that are open pollinated and available for you. You want to tell them a little bit about the Great American Seed Up and Seed Up in a Box, Bill?
Well, the whole idea is to get as many different kinds of things to as many people as possible in the cheapest way. And so if you go down and buy a packet of seeds, 90 plus percent of the cost of that packet of seeds is in the packaging and the system to get you those seeds.
Yeah.
I was in the seed business in the industry for 35 years or whatever, 28 years with my own company. And that's the formula. So how can you get more seeds to more people cheaper? That was the impetus behind the Great American Seed Up. So what we do, because I learned about all these growers in these places all over the country over almost 40 years, I knew where to get big bulk amounts of some of the last great open pollinated varieties, the land races that are left from an era from the teens and 20s and 30s and 40s when it was all non-hybrid. When every company, and some of the best work was done by Campbell's Soup for tomatoes.
Really?
Yeah, for their, and Heinz for their ketchup. They did incredible breeding projects around open pollinated seeds. And so some of those varieties are still out there. It didn't all disappear. although industry tried to do that to the home garden market, right? Mm-hmm. We don't want to sell gardeners non-hybrids because then they could save their own seeds. And that means they won't come back the next year and buy them, right? That was the operational thing.
Yeah.
So anyway, Greg and I got to talking. We put together a program. We buy, how many different varieties do we have now?
100.
We have over 100 different popular American garden varieties, open pollinated, to come out of this other era, that are grown in large enough quantities that we can bring in pounds and pounds of them at one time and put them in what we found, popcorn buckets, because we didn't want any costs, right?
Yeah.
And we put them on tables in a church once a year. And we have this big event where people can come in and they do their own packaging.
Yeah.
There's little scoops and you scoop it up and put it in an envelope. We've got little cards with the instructions. So 90% of the cost is gone. You do your own work. You can wander around this big hall with hundreds of other people and 100 different varieties of seeds, get exactly the amount you need and buy them by the scoop. So that's the Great American Seed Up.
That's the Great American Seed Up Seed Bazaar that we do every October in Phoenix.
Right.
And this will be our 10th year doing it, by the way. Can you believe that, Bill?
Wow.
Yeah. And when COVID hit, we couldn't do it. So we put together a, what we call Seed Up in a Box. And the Seed Up in a Box is a selection of 25, 50, or 75 different varieties of open pollinated seeds. And we send you a bundle. And the bundles are designed for you to do your own mini seed up where you live. And we've sent them all over the United States and Canada. And people buy these bundles. And basically what you get is 25 different varieties, 10 portions. So we send them to you in bulk with the bags and the cards and everything. And then you portion them out. And that's actually the fun part.
Have a party, have a seed exchange, churches, all sorts of groups. So you can get all sorts of new open pollinated seeds into your community for cheap. Mm-hmm. And the idea is then is you don't want to do this every year and supply everybody's seeds. The idea is to teach everybody there how to save their own seeds, that this is the start of your own adventure, that you're going to further adapt these land races into your own conditions where you are.
When this came out of a conversation that you and I were having, Bill, in 2011, 2000, I did your seed school. And I decided coming out of seed school that I was going to set up a seed bank in Phoenix. And so we bought, I don't know, $1,500 worth of seeds, and I put them in jars and I put them in a freezer in Phoenix. And that was my seed bank. But that didn't solve the problem, because what I was trying to do was get 10,000 seed banks in people's houses. And so that's how this idea of the Great American Seed Up arrived one day. We were on vacationing in Mexico on the beach, and you and I had a conversation, and that's what we started.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so, how do you change the world? Like, 10 years later, how many thousands of people have come through the seed bazaar in Phoenix now?
We get 400 to 500
and taken
people
home seeds.
Yeah.
With the knowledge about saving them.
Yeah.
We can all have an effect and start with a small seed up in a box, whatever you need to do. But I would do it soon.
Yeah,
I still see storm clouds on the horizon. I don't see the rainbow yet. We're going to see it, I'm sure, at some point, but we don't see it yet.
So Alchemy of Birth says one seed at a time. There you go.
There you go.
The Great American Seed Up can be found at greatamericanseedup.org. And you can find out about our event there on greatamericanseedup.org, or you can buy your bundles. We actually have one guy, he's been on the podcast, out of Oklahoma, who once a year he buys a bundle and does a potluck.
Yeah.
And at the potluck, everybody brings some food, and there's a small fee for the potluck, because what you're going to take home is 25 varieties of seeds.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. One more thing here. Leslie says, have you met Zen Honeycutt in Asheville? Moms Across America is her organization in clean food for kids. She's very active at the FDA and Congress. And yes, she is. And Leslie, very interestingly, Zen lives 2 miles from me. So wow. She's doing amazing work. I was out at her farm the other day. She's got she has a 20 acre farm. I have a 5 acre farm and she's doing great work. I've got her coming out on the podcast sometime in the next couple, 3 weeks. I think we've have her an episode with her coming out on the podcast. Yeah.
Hey, be one of those people.
Yeah,
that everybody's
exactly.
talking about. We need more.
Bill, thank you so much for joining us yet again. Give us 30 seconds, literally 30 seconds about your seed company.
Oh, I'm trying to get out of the seed company business. I am still shipping seeds for the Heritage Grain Alliance. And so the idea is that we ended up with, I've got more than 100 varieties online of rare, endangered, yet proven varieties through a network of growers that we developed at Rocky Mountain Seed Alliance of grains that if you want to bring more diversity and you want to get into grains, which we all should, it's 70% of what we eat, and you can't find the varieties that you're looking for, that's what this is set up for. And I'm only sending you 50 seeds or so. Yeah. And I asked $5 donation for each packet to help cover the cost of the website and the other stuff. But cool. If you want to go to Heritage Grain Alliance, go to easiest way, I think, is seedsave.org.
Perfect.
Seedsave.org.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. And the greatamericanseedup.org for some great seeds. All right, Bill. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you, everybody, for showing up. We appreciate it. And we'll catch you next month.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Urban Farm Podcast. Remember to listen for tips, advice, and resources to help you on your journey with urban farming. You can find us on the web at urbanfarm.org or send us an email to podcast@urbanfarm.org. In the words of Vincent Van Gogh, great things are done by a series of small things brought together. Be encouraged that with each lesson learned and skill developed, you are one step closer in the direction of your dreams.